I've been a rabbi in Los Angeles long enough to know that all of you are writing screenplays. Except some of the schoolmates of the bat mitzvah who aren't writing screenplays yet. And so I thought that I would give you the formula just in case you don't have it, in order to help you along your way, since that's what rabbis are supposed to do. It's boy meets girl, boy loses girl, boy gets girl. Now you're all set. Because our natural inclination should be boy gets girl and we're done. And of course, the separation, the boy loses girl part, we discover is essential for the satisfying coming together again. And that reality is one, and in some ways the less interesting, of the meanings of kedusha, of holiness. Because if you ask somebody who is versed in the Jewish tradition what kadosh means, they will tell you it means holy, but it also means separate. Now that's a strange meaning for holiness. And the way that it is usually interpreted is you separate yourself from things that are not holy, and that's what holiness is. So, for example, even in the sort of equivalent, which is devekut, which means clinging or togetherness, the first time that's used in the Bible is al kein ya'azov adam et aviv ve'imo v'davak be'ishto. Therefore, a man will leave his father and mother and cling to his wife, as though clinging always involves leaving. And you can't attach yourself to one thing without, at the same time, separating yourself from something else. So we understand that idea of kedusha, meaning separating yourself from that which is not kadosh. But as I said, in some ways, that's the less interesting meaning or implication of kedusha. Because if you think about it, marriage is called kiddushin, which you can translate either as marriage is called sanctity togetherness, or it's called separateness. And this already gives you a hint of the insight of the tradition into every aspect of life, which is that togetherness has inside of itself the reality of separateness. Let there be spaces in your togetherness, said Gibran, who of course was not quoting the Jewish tradition. But Buber was when he said, all love requires detachment. That in fact, inside of togetherness, there's always an apartness. That's part of the lesson of Kedusha, and it's not only true for individuals, it's true for communities. Invariably, people will say, why is it that the Jewish people can't be together? Thereby, by the way, disregarding all of Jewish history, when we never were, but also disregarding the dynamic of togetherness, which, like a DNA spiral, involves moving apart and coming together and moving apart and coming together. And moments of exquisite closeness rely in part on moments of distance. Boy meets girl, boy loses girl, boy gets girl. It's all part of the dynamic of Kedusha. It's one of the reasons why you have Shabbat. Shabbat is supposed to be this peaceful day in which wholeness and togetherness are exemplified. But you realize that if that were the normal condition of human life, Shabbat would be every day. But it is only one day because there have to be spaces in order for there to be togetherness. As the French poet Valéry put it, God made the world out of nothing, and sometimes the nothingness shows through. This idea at the very heart of the Jewish tradition, that Kedushah involves spaces as well as closeness, is reflective of a larger Jewish idea, which you can also see instantiated, exemplified right in the wedding ceremony. And that is that life is not supposed to be this perfect, peaceful, easy, untroubled existence. I mean, we're used to it, but really think about how strange it is that at the moment that a man and a woman are standing under the chuppah and they're looking to the future and they're expressing their attachment and their love, we say, listen, break a glass so we can remember the destruction of the temple. It's a very bizarre thing to do. We're used to it, but it's very strange. Really, they could remember the destruction of the temple after the honeymoon. They have to do it under the chuppah. And yet, it is an affirmation of the idea that the perfect, peaceful existence that everybody thinks should be normative human life not only never was, but ought not to be. That struggle, sometimes distance, and difficulty, they're at the heart of things. They're not peripheral. They're not external invaders on the perfect peacefulness that each of us should be. It's why our name comes from Yisrael, struggling with God. An angel visits Jacob. Now, if you didn't know the story, and I told you an angel visited Jacob, you would say, oh, how lovely. He probably came to bless him. And I say, no, 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 they came to fight. That's not what you normally expect an angel to do. An angel knocks at your door, you open. You think it's going to be nice. It's going to be kind. But again, the upending of expectation teaches us that our expectation is wrong, not that the story is anomalous or different or wrong. Which is that this idea that life should be calm, it's not a Jewish idea. My friend Joseph Epstein says he has known many bright Jews, many accomplished Jews, but almost no serene Jews. And this notion that, in fact, conflict is endemic to being a human being, that it's normal in a sense, that spaces are a part of who we are. It's something that seems pessimistic, but it's not. Jews are neither pessimists nor optimists. We're struggleists. That's what we are. We believe that struggle is the way that the world moves forward. And that doesn't mean that you don't have peaceful moments and moments of joy, of course. But it also means that this idea that everything should be calm, should be fine, that there never should be strife, there never should be friction, there never should be struggle, is contradicted at the very beginning of creation, at the very heart of the tradition. In the very word holiness, which lets you know that it is a dynamic process, not a static existence. It's not that you start holy and you stay holy. And that's true in all of our lives. We are, actually, in the words of a philosopher who not only wasn't Jewish, but wasn't very sympathetic to Jews, but Schopenhauer put it well when he said that human beings are like porcupines. They get cold and they move close together, but then they start to stick each other. And they get prickly, and so they move apart again, but then they discover they're cold, so they move back together. It's a dynamic process. And that's why in the Jewish tradition, unlike any other tradition I know, the notion of arguing with God, of fighting with God, of shaking your fist against the sky, goes all the way back to the Torah. In every generation, Jews are not only dissatisfied with life and dissatisfied with themselves and dissatisfied with each other, they're dissatisfied with God. And when you say that, by the way, as I have had occasion to, in front of other traditions, it strikes them as absurd. How can you be angry at God? You're not supposed to get angry at God. You're supposed to adjust your expectations. But that's not how we've worked. And so even though we know from the time of Oedipus to the time of Apatow that it's boy meets girl, boy loses girl, boy gets girl, that's the eternal way, somehow we feel like it shouldn't be that way. Somehow we feel like it should be smooth and untroubled. Everybody should have peace of mind. We should all meditate. We should all be happy. And we shouldn't get upset. But that's not life, and that's not Torah. And it's not even holiness. Holiness, like everything else that is worthwhile in life, requires some struggle, some failure, some overcoming, and some failure again. At the heart of our tradition is this very idea. At the heart of Shabbat is this very idea, which is, okay, let's have this brief period of togetherness and calm because we know tomorrow is coming. Because we believe what Beckett used to keep over his desk, ever fail, fail again, fail better. Ever struggle, struggle again, struggle better. It's not a counsel of desperation. It's not like what Abba Eban said when he said that Jews like their clouds without silver linings. It's rather that we know that silver linings are temporary, that storms will come, that there's always a crisis and always a crossroads and always a problem. And even though we deceive ourselves to think that if we get past this problem, everything will be all right, I am here to tell you, there's another one down the road. And one after that, and one after that, and one after that. And that is life. That's why Chaim has two yuds. And the two yuds, you know, in Yetzer stand for the good side and the dark side. Life has it too. The good side and the dark side. The separateness and the togetherness. The struggle and the triumph. Spiritual calm is snake oil. It's not real. You may attain it for a moment, but life will upend you, and it should, and that's good. So if somebody promises you peace of mind, don't believe them. You can attain it for a moment, but then there'll be the necessity of struggle, of progress, of wrestling with the angel, of being angry at God, of understanding that there is too much difficulty and sorrow and suffering in the world to have perfect shalvat nefesh, to have perfect peace and calm. You want to be holy, says our tradition? Then understand that sometimes means you will feel separate, you will feel lonely, you will feel frustrated, you'll feel unfinished. That's part of holiness too. It is not always perfect. It is not always happy. But it is always holy. And in the pursuit of the sacred, you will have peaks and valleys, sorrows and joys. But all of it is l'shem shamayim, is for the sake of something greater and better. And that's why we're here. Not just to feel that everything is fine, but to feel that everything could be better, to feel that everything could be holy, to keep working, to keep striving, to keep dreaming, and to understand that l'taken olam b'malchut Shaddai, that to fix the world as God wishes it, is not easy, but is always worthy. Shabbat shalom.